Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a good Thursday morning. Wanted to read to you from 2 Timothy chapter 3. This is the last epistle Paul ever wrote before he was martyred by Emperor Nero. He says this in chapter 3, "But realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come, for men will be lovers of self, lovers of money." And then he goes on with many more things that are negative: boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, unloving, unholy, ungrateful, all those things. But the very first two, lovers of self, lovers of money, in the last days. I think we're seeing those things right now where people are so narcissistic and people are in love with money. Now, the Bible makes it clear, Paul in his first epistle to Timothy, he said, "For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs." Hey, do you love money? We all need money. But once you start loving money, you have turned off onto a dark, dark path. Well, it's a privilege for me today to welcome to the program one of Texarkana's most beloved and brightest stars, and that is golf legend Bill Rogers. Bill Rogers was the PGA Tour Player of the Year in 1981. He won golf's most coveted tournament, I think I can say that with confidence, the British Open, just called the Open Championship. He won that in 1981, beating Bernhard Langer by four shots and winning the coveted Claret Jug. He is just a wonderful guy, loves the Lord, and has been a wonderful representative of Texarkana. So, Bill, welcome to the program. Uh-oh. I think we just lost him. All right. I think he hit a button that knocked him off. So see if we can get him back, Mark. He was there and then he was gone. So just to give you a little bit of background on Bill Rogers. So Bill Rogers basically grew up here in Texarkana. There he is. Bill, are you back?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm not real good at the operating this Zoom deal, and I had a call, incoming call, and I pressed the wrong button.
not a problem at all. So, Bill, when did golf really get infused into your blood?
Well, Jeff, first of all, good to be with you. I'm sorry for that little snafu there, but I had the privilege of family that introduced me to golf, and when my dad retired and we moved to Texarkana is when really my former golf career began. And that was because Northridge Country Club, the golf professional Jerry Robison there, had taken me kind of under his wing, saw a young kid with some talent, and made the game fun and interesting, and included me and all that was going on, in learning how to play golf. And so that's when it really, really kind of, and my family was, had a competitive, aspect to it. My dad loved to compete, as did my brother Rick. And so it was kind of a natural to fall into, loving the game and playing the game.
Yeah. So you were how old when you started to really get into it?
I was 9, and then when we moved to Texarkana, I was 12. And, you know, I began to at least pay attention a little bit early on. And, the fact that Mr. Robison and Northridge and Texarkana had such a big influence on my life, I still call it home, by the way.
Yeah.
I fell in love with the game, and I loved to compete, and I loved all that it was about.
Yeah. I contend, Bill, that golf is the hardest sport to play. And yet I heard Lee Trevino say one time, he said golf always came easy to him, or he said to me. which floors me because golf is so hard. So for a guy like you, who became the player of the year in 1981, did you pick up golf quickly? Did it seem like it was just natural to you, or did you have to really work at it?
Jeff, I did. I might be one of the few, maybe like Lee, that could say that it. The first time I picked up a golf club, I could do it, and I probably would say that the fact that I followed my dad and brother to the golf course, caddied, shag balls, all the stuff, before I even played the game, I was introduced to it by watching it. And that had a big impact with, you know, with my early formative golf playing. I could kind of do it right from the start. You know, there probably obviously was some learning curve there, but in my memory, I could get the ball around the golf course. And the fact that I love to, kind of on a regular basis, prove myself and trying to get better, had a lot to do being able to, play the game from the very start.
Okay. So Bill, for lots of athletes, golf is a different kind of athleticism, because being strong, being quick, being instinctive, some of those things kind of work against you at golf, because I want to hit it farther, so I'm going to try harder, and that seems to bring the opposite effect. How do you see that golf as a sport compared to other sports with just natural athleticism?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And I, back to your earlier statement of the hardest game, I certainly believe that. And proof in point is that it's interesting that you see all the greatest of great athletes, be it Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, all the folks of team sports seem to gravitate toward the great challenge of golf. Because it's not only just a sport challenge, but it's a life challenge game. And anyway, but in regards to speaking of athleticism, when I joined the tour, there was really kind of only one person that you would kind of think of as being an athlete that treated it that way, and that was Gary Player. Of course, in modern day, Tiger Woods introduced athleticism, I think, to the game. And basically, as the game we had known, it changed, because there were so many factors in terms of equipment and the fact that these all levels of players getting stronger, bigger, and the long game, so to speak, has become you know, probably the primary aspect of high-level professional golf anyway. And everybody's enjoyed the benefits of hitting the golf ball further. And if you're interested in really taking that to a different level, you know, you go through the training. And that's what a lot of these guys, not only physically, but mentally as well.
Okay, so if you were playing today with the equipment we have today, your training would be totally different. They would try and bulk you up, or how would you think that would be?
Well, they have really formulated ways of getting stronger without becoming Hulk Hogan, so to speak. You know, there's been a lot of focus on the strengthening of and flexibility, of which is primary in length, as you relate it to hitting a golf ball. But you know, when in my era, we ran for the hills. We didn't even want to lift a suitcase or our golf bags when we were playing. And I really say that kind of in jest, but it was the truth. There was, you know, from a physical standpoint, we really didn't entertain the idea of being gym rats or spending any time really working at becoming a physical athlete anyway. So, yeah.
But now, okay, so I've read before and heard Tiger talk about his training regimen I mean, he'd hit, you know, he'd work out, lift weights, and then he'd like play tennis or basketball or run or whatever. And then he'd hit golf balls for hours and hours and hours and putt for hours. I'm assuming you guys back in the 70s and 80s, you were just on the course, right? Just hitting balls and practicing that way.
Yeah, but from first light to dark, we were there, you know, and about any of my contemporaries, friends, tour players, when I played the tour, we were always brought up playing the game. And, you know, lots of us would probably speak to our parents dropping us off and letting us go, letting us stay at the golf course all day long and then coming and picking us up at dark. And that's kind of was my it was the way I operated as a kid growing up in the game. Spent all my life, it seemed like, at the golf course.
Yeah, and that makes it – golf is a different game for that, because like basketball, I played basketball growing up. Well, you could play for a while, but then you ran out of gas. You know, it's too physically exhausting. And so if you play for 2 or 3 hours, then it's like, I can't play anymore. But golf, you can play all day.
It's exactly. And, you know, especially when you were out there trying to beat your friends, and there was the competitive aspect to it. I mean, you know, that'd keep you out there as well. So, I always have a big smile come on my face when I think about, you know, my childhood and, you know, what growing up in the game.
Yeah. Bill, for you specifically, when you would practice, are you practicing the long game or the short game? I've heard like people like Gary Player say you need to spend a lot more time on the short game than you do the long game.
Well, that's where I would give Mr. Robinson a whole lot of credit. He made it very he emphatically stressed the important short game. And we would, we would spend as much time pitching, chipping, putting as we would in working on the long game. So be that as it may, he ingrained early that the importance of the short game. And I think quite probably that's the reason I felt like that when I played the game for a living that, you know, I had a very good short game.
Bill, when you play golf for a living, you know, people watch it on TV and they think, oh, how glamorous these guys have it made. The travel side of golf, the being away from home side of golf, the constant grind of golf, that's what a lot of people don't think about. But that's really what kind of drove you to burnout, wasn't it?
It was, Jeff, and you know, I loved it though. You know, youth is a wonderful thing. I think it, you know, it'd be a nice thing to bottle up and keep for a while, but it also can, you know, be a curse as well. But be that as it may, I loved everything about playing professional golf course. When I think of a career and a life in the game, I also think of, you know, my junior golf, my high school, college golf, of which was, you know, kind of the evolution of becoming a professional golfer. But there's a lot to the profession of golf other than just hitting a golf ball and posting a score. As you mentioned, the travel, which is of utmost importance to have a wonderful support group around you. And in my case, my wife, she loved the lifestyle, was a wonderful supporter of what I did. And so we, I think we were one up in that category. We didn't think too much about how tough anything was. Of course, you know, the ups and downs of playing good or bad or kind of in between is a roller coaster ride for sure. It's part of the journey, learning. But the fact of the matter is, we loved it, and loving something and it was a you know, just a sharp focus of what, you know, we thought.
Let me jump in here, Bill. We're up against a break. I'm talking to golf legend Bill Rogers, the 1981 Player of the Year. We're talking about the love of money. We'll be right back.
Here's Rob West of Faith and Finance, heard here daily on American Family Radio.
We understand how important it is for Christians to leave a legacy that will impact generations to come. One way you can do that is through a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation. A charitable gift annuity benefits the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. It helps ensure American Family Association is here boldly standing for biblical principles well into the future. And the charitable gift annuity allows you to shore up permanent income for life. Reach out to Riley Wildman and the team at the AFA Foundation today to see if a charitable gift annuity is right for you. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit them online at afafoundation.net.
The term providence means God's superintending care over His creation.
America's Providential History with Stephen McDowell.
God is at work performing His will in history. And so through this podcast, we're going to be taking a look at the providence of God in the history, and in particular in the history of America.
America's Providential History, available now on the podcast page at afr.net.
On the next Focus on the Family, Michael Johnson offers practical, faith-centered guidance for young adults who are searching for a spouse. You'll hear why developing strong relational skills before romance matters, how to cultivate a healthy mindset, and what it looks like to build a shared mission rooted in God's purpose. That's next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
The enemy wants to destroy anything of God's, especially mankind who is made in God's image.
What would it be like if every person knew that they were created in the image of God?
We're talking about people, people loved by the Father, people for whom Jesus died.
We have to stand on God's truth.
We hear in culture all the time, we need to find ourselves, we need to go find our identity. We are already defined. We are known before the foundations of the world.
In His Image is a life-changing film that has helped people break free from the grip of evil. It will take you through Scripture to show the truth, and its powerful testimonies will destroy Satan's attempts to pervert God's perfect design.
We now know with the genome of all of the DNA that there is no propensity towards a genetic disposition to homosexual behavior.
Watch it for the first time or again with someone who needs to see it. Get the two DVD set at resources.afa.net.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. We're talking to golf pro Bill Rogers. Bill grew up here and started playing golf here in Texarkana, Texas at Northridge Country Club, where myself and others play and enjoy it. We always have to turn down Bill Rogers Drive to get to the Northridge Country Club. It's named after him. And then Texarkana Country Club, which is one of the hidden gems in this part of the world. Is that not right, Bill?
Oh, absolutely. It's a crown jewel in Northeast Texas. I know there are a lot of people that love to play Texarkana Country Club, Little Augusta.
Yeah, Little Augusta. And so I had mentioned to you before the program that Bryson DeChambeau was here on Sunday. He had worked it out with the club pro to bring his whole YouTube team, and they filmed him. He was going to try and break the course record. Bill, I think the course record at Texarkana Country Club is 61, and to my knowledge, he didn't do it.
No, nor did I at any point.
What was your best score out there?
I'd bet that he probably might have driven it on half of the holes there. That'd probably be a pretty short course for Bryson.
Yeah, for you personally, what was your best score at both Northridge and Texarkana Country Club?
Oh, I'm not sure I can even remember that. I'd bet that probably 64 or 5, maybe it both something in that,
yeah,
that world.
Okay, so you win the British Open, which is the is it Is it fair to say for most golfers that would be, of all the tournaments you could win, if you could only win one, they would choose that one?
Oh, I don't know. There was a point in time where I think that would might have been the case. All of the majors are held in such high esteem and are, are regarded as so important in this day and time we live in. But the Open Championship, being the oldest major championship, has always held a special position in the world of professional golf, certainly. And as we are going to talk about money and the whole gamut of golf, the Open Championship is really has always been regarded as the world's championship. And as an Open champion, the world wants to see you. And as we'll probably get into, I didn't disappoint them there. I can promise you. I travel every corner of the earth. As much as wanting to be an ambassador for the Open Championship, but I was in love with that almighty dollar. It was an idol.
When did that change for you? When did you notice yourself really starting to go after the money?
Well, as soon as I held out my last putt in 1981 at the Open Championship, as the world as I knew it changed, and I was vaulted into a different category as a professional golfer. And I'd almost say that as much as you have to be prepared for failure and losing, you probably, it's wise to be prepared for success and all that comes with that. And I certainly wasn't. I was pretty content with playing the game as a professional golfer, making a nice living. And as a kid, we all kind of on the putting green putted, tried to make a putt to win the U.S. Sure. Open or Masters Open Championship. But that was not a driver of mine. I was pretty content with just playing the game as a professional. But as fortune had it, I moved along and put myself in a position to be a player that was capable of winning a major, and did. So
Bill, we live in a world today, especially with the NIL situation in college sports, where young guys are starting to just chase money. I heard Nick Saban say, he and his wife would bring in these recruits and their parents, and they would talk to them, about how we're going to be like surrogate parents for your children. And I think it was his wife that said they don't want that anymore. They don't care about that anymore. All they want to know is how much you're going to pay my son. And it seems like that just ruins I just think that money ruins everything when it becomes the focus.
Well, let me add one little aspect to that. You combine youth and the and incredible, what is in fact incredible wealth, and that is potentially a dangerous recipe. You better have some incredible parents or team or pastors, important people that can somewhat form out a spot for you that you can be able to manage all of this temptation of the almighty dollar, because it can cripple you, and it can become a primary focus in your life. And, it can ultimately, which you and I think could speak to, it can define you. It can be your identity, and certainly what comes with that is identifying who you are in the world by how much you have. And at one point that was a strong motivator for me. I thought you had to have a lot to be a lot. And I was a slow learner. And from no fault, of anybody else other than myself, because I made the choices to I had plenty of opportunity, and I loved the idea that I did, and I went for it. And ultimately, and we may speak of it, you know, probably caused a degree of burnout. No doubt about it.
Yeah. How do you think when you were on the tour, Bill, and, you know, you were there with Jack and with Arnold toward the end of his career, and a lot of big names, Gary Player was still playing then, you know, on tour. How did those guys navigate that in your mind? Because you always can see, I would think you could see guys that's like, this guy's going off the rails. He's drinking a lot. Maybe he's carousing or whatever. I don't want to do that. I'm married, have a family. Were there some role models that you could model as a younger guy when you were growing up in it?
Well, I think definitely so. And as it relates to a faith journey in 1976, just my second year on tour, there was what was called a tour Bible study, met every Tuesday night. And there were some wonderful people involved with that, the Larry Nelsons and Rick Massengales and Wally Armstrongs, and they were quick to invite the young players, the newer players on the tour, to come attend and, you know, to get, you know, to see kind of the opportunity to maybe manage this insane lifestyle of being a professional golfer. So I met the Lord one Tuesday night in Tallahassee, Florida. I heard the good news. Forgiveness and hope and peace and joy. And heck, I was on fire as a new believer for 2 weeks, man. I had a major behavioral change. Like reading the Bible, I was a very, very much a profane mouth. But anyway, I had some immediate changes, but the lure of the lifestyle and, you know, all involved with being a professional golfer, quickly took hold of me again. And I put on the shelf the idea of pursuing a faith journey and what that was all about. And it really wasn't until I left off the tour in 1988 that, that became an important, aspect of where I wanted to, you know, spend my time, for post-professional golf.
Right. Okay, so you win the British in 81, your whole world changes, and now you're in high demand. You become the PGA Player of the Year. So that would be, Bill, that would be like being the number one player in the world, because they didn't have that back then, right? They didn't rank the players?
No, but that'd be safe to say. You know, when your peers acknowledge you as the player of the year, that's kind of would be defining into itself. Yes.
Okay, so you're a Christian at that time, but you're not really walking with the Lord, is that right?
No, sir, not by stretch of the imagination. I wouldn't dare try to fool God into thinking that. No, I was living in a world all about me and totally focused on what I could take. I was a sure enough taker, didn't have much give. And like I said, it was many years later that I say many, it really wasn't that, but it was 7 years after all of that whirlwind success on tour that I walked away from it.
How long did it take you, Bill, to feel like I'm just totally burned out? Did that take the full 7 years, or had that been brewing for a long time?
It had been brewing, and I would, I've thought about it often. I believe it could have been at the end of the 1986 tour season that I really began to kind of question, is this what I'm going to do? I'd kind of fallen out of love with the golf, and certainly professional golf and all that was involved with it. I became you know, I would self-admittedly lazy, complacent with working at my golf game. I wasn't willing to pay the price to be great. I was pretty content with mediocrity, which that's a good ingredient if you want to ship out of what you're doing, because what wasn't long before it wasn't out there to compete, really. It was just to go through the motions. And not a good place to be at all. In fact, I would, I can think of many times of being in dark places and really preferring to do anything other than play golf. I didn't like anything about it. And so that was a dark babe. So, you know, God was faithful in introducing a new chapter in my life, and forever grateful for that.
Yeah. Now, what was your wife's response with that? Was she glad? I mean, she obviously saw that you were kind of melting down inside.
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question, because as I mentioned earlier on, she was a trooper. She loved the lifestyle. She was good at it. She could organize, keep us, everything in order. And really, my life really amounted to, if I could find the first tee on Thursday on time and sign my scorecard, I was in pretty good shape. So she could take care of all the details. But I would tell you that I hate to even admit this, almost to the today as we speak, she might have regretted leaving the lifestyle, but she was a supporter. We had young children coming along as we left the tour. And obviously, as a mother and father, we had different priorities. And so that made it kind of a no-brainer. But she loved it. She loved her friends. Heck, I love my friends that we grew in the game with, but it was time for a change, and we embraced it. And maybe this is for a different question, but one of the things, the gifts that God gives us, of being able to reflect back and look in the rearview mirror, I never regretted making that decision and leaving the competitive world of professional golf. And I think that, I don't know, it was almost like an affirmation. And so that was a good way to start the next chapter of my life.
Yeah. Okay, I know that you beat Bernhard Langer in 1981 for the British Open Championship. And then Langer played, he just in the last year retired? He's had an unbelievable career in terms of longevity.
Yeah, it just remarkable. It's one of the absolute top two or three stories of professional golfers. It's just to know how hard the game is, but to physically still be he's a German, you know, of course he's an American now, but a German's got that incredible will to want to play and gosh, I didn't know he retired. I thought he's still doing it.
Well, you know, his story is similar to yours, Bill. I think he got saved at a golf, some kind of Bible study on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. He's been a wonderful ambassador for Jesus, and quick to share his faith, and that of utmost importance to him. In fact, his testimony is well documented on YouTube and all the stuff. I'd encourage anyone to look it up and to see how he came to faith. Remarkable story. And certainly, you know, he would credit the Lord for the longevity he's been able to enjoy in the game.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to see guys like Scottie Scheffler who you know, use the game of golf to platform their faith and to let people know about Jesus. We see that in different arenas of the sporting world. And it is a great opportunity because you have the microphone in your face and you can, you not preach a sermon, but you can let people know, hey, I'm doing this through the power of the Lord. Well, we're talking to golf legend Bill Rogers. He was the PGA Tour Player of the Year, the best player in the world in 1981. He won the coveted Open Championship that year along with some other tournaments. But then the grind of chasing the almighty dollar really soured him on continuing, so he left the game in your prime, Bill. You were 36, 37 years old, still had a lot in the tank, but God had another plan for him. And so we are up against a break, but when we come back, we'll come back with more Bill Rogers. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Andy Miller, and I'm the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary based in Ridgeland, Mississippi. We are developing trusted leaders for faithful churches, and we do that based in the authority of Scripture and in the reality that Christians can be transformed. We do that also through bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees. We'd love for you to learn more about Wesley Biblical Seminary at wbs.edu, where we're developing trusted leaders for faithful churches.
For more than 150 years, Blue Mountain Christian University has been committed to educating students through a Christian worldview rooted in Scripture and truth. Our close-knit campus community, affordable degree options, and dedicated faculty prepare students for lives of faith, leadership, and service. With on-campus and online programs, BMCU meets students where they are without compromising what matters most. Learn more at bmc.edu and move mountains with Blue Mountain Christian University.
Once upon a time, news of what was happening around the country relied on riders on horseback or stagecoach runs to get from town to town. Needless to say, breaking news was more like slowly melting news. The telegraph helped speed up the spread of information, but not every town had a telegraph office, so it was time to saddle up the horses again. Today, we have instant access to lots of different stories about the same issue or event. But many news outlets have learned how to twist the news to fit their narrative and control public thoughts and opinions. American Family News is different. You still get up-to-the-minute information on the news from home and abroad, but we report the facts from a Christian perspective. You get to make up your own mind and form your own opinions. Why not join the growing number of people who trust American Family News for timely, accurate information? Visit AFN.net today. AFN.net.
With today's Dr. Dobson Minute, here's Dr. James Dobson.
It used to be believed that most children were basically happy and carefree, but that's changing. Now we're seeing more signs of serious depression in children, even as young as 5 years old. If a 5 to 10-year-old is depressed, he may show signs of lethargy. He may show no interest in things that would normally excite him. Sleep disturbances and stomach complaints are other warning signs. Another symptom can be open anger, hostility, and rage. If you suspect your child is beginning to show the signs of depression, there are several things you should do. First, you should help put into words the feelings of the child and try to find an explanation for their sadness. Make yourself available to listen without judging or belittling the feelings expressed. Finally, I urge you to seek professional help if you feel the problem is out of hand.
For more information on this topic, visit drdobsonminute.org.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. I'm talking to golf legend Bill Rogers. He was the 1981 Player of the Year on the PGA Tour, having won a number of tournaments, but the most notable one was the Open Championship. We used to call that the British Open. They just call it the Open Championship. He won it by 4 shots over another golf legend, Bernhard Langer, who just recently retired from the Champions Tour. And so, Bill, we were talking at the break. You did all this travel. People think in terms of today with pro golfers, you're the number one golfer in the world. Well, surely the first thing you get is a plane. But you did all this travel commercially. You don't have your own plane.
No. Oh, that's just almost. I got to laugh at that. Actually, that is no. I did not have my own plane. There were really I don't know if Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus might have been the only two that I knew of that actually owned an airplane and were afforded the comforts of doing that. But no, that wasn't a part of our deal, nor did we have cell phones and all the stuff that we enjoy today. But, travel was, although easier in regards to, not the discomfort of TSA and all the stuff that goes with travel today, but it was still rigorous. And, that gift of youth, that was not even a consideration. It's what you did and it's what you love doing.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Bill. If you could go back in time, knowing what you know now, and you're back on the PGA Tour, you're a young guy, but you have the the sense and the wisdom of Bill Rogers today, how would you approach things differently?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I've not really dwelled on that too much. I think that the thing that pops into my mind foremost is that I was a very poor manager of time. And like I said, that great lure of the almighty dollar just had me and had its way with me. And I was involved with a management group, sports agent, that was able to develop all the opportunity that you could possibly digest. And I don't think I ever said no. If I could go back in time, I would love to think that I, even a small degree of wisdom, that I could have managed time better and put a kind of a check on the importance of how much money I was making, and dismiss that totally, and just do everything I could to be fresh and to stay in love with the game that had afforded me much, but it sent me off the rails. And I don't know, I'm grateful for every ounce of it, to be honest with you, because as I look at it from God's perspective, he allowed me to experience a great rich life, not rich literally, but to have experienced so much, and the important people and the wonderful people that he's put in my path and in my life has been just remarable. So to be
right. Bill, did you see, when you were on the tour, the PGA Tour, did you see a lot of guys? Because guys are gone so much of the time, which is the recipe for disaster. You can get yourself in all kinds of trouble with alcohol, with carousing, with women. Did you see a lot of marriage? It's almost like being in the military, where marriages just fail over and over and over. Were you witnessing that?
Well, certainly. And there was a high degree of level of divorce on the tour. And you're exactly right. There was a lot of temptation, no doubt about that. But, one thing that as it relates to marriage that was so important as you pursued your profession, was that you were awfully fortunate if you had a wife that was 100% in, supportive, and was committed and sacrificed to the lifestyle that not only you chose, but that she chose. And that was, I'm not going to say that, well, that was not the case all the time. There were a lot of marriages that suffered because the wife just couldn't quite adjust to that lifestyle. So, that you could take that out and speak on it all day long, but it was a test for a marriage, no doubt about it.
Yeah, for sure. What would be your advice to young guys? The difference when we talk about the love of money and how it's just gotten into the college game to such a degree where these guys are just chasing it, and they're blowing off their college careers just chasing money. We had a guy in Texarkana that played football here, and then he went to A&M, and then from A&M he transferred to Indiana. He was at Indiana for a year, and then he transferred because he was, they were paying him more NIL money. And I told a friend, I said, good night, if the guy had stayed at Indiana, he would have been a national champion. That stays with you for the rest of your life, chasing another 20,000-30,000 that's here today, gone tomorrow. What would you say to those young guys that are doing that stuff?
Well, maybe first and foremost is pursue a faith, and to understand spiritually who you are, and as it relates to what you're doing and everything else in life. I think that's very important. We have some tremendous examples and ambassadors of the faith community that allows you to at least have an idea of the pitfalls along the way, and kind of, I know we've all seen it coming, certainly us sports fans. We knew that the love of money, the almighty dollar, was going to infiltrate to a large degree the sports world, and it has. And, you know, as quickly as we want to point fingers at the potential of what the almighty dollar, how it can influence your life on the short term, there are some examples. You know, you mentioned Scottie Scheffler, but you know, his where he stands in the sport now speaks not just only to golf, but across the whole line of sports. And he's a wonderful example of how to navigate this incredible high profile world of sport. And mm-hmm. you know, he basically came out of what is called College Golf Fellowship, CGF, which is a ministry in the college ranks of speaking into these young college players and to prepare them for the next step, which it may be playing professional golf or pursuing a business, mm-hmm. you know, business opportunities. But you know, we're led to believe by what the world feeds us that success is defined by how much you have. And boy, you know, all the stuff we want, all the possessions, the puny pursuits of possessions and prizes and success. But ultimately, the beauty and relationship is right. where we want to be headed. And because that's all that's going with us in this the next step, that eternal step is relationships and
right.
what others mean to us. Yeah.
Okay. So Bill, when you graduated high school, it seemed like all the pro golfers, I mean, the next step was you go to college. And was anybody back in your era, was anybody bypassing college to just go on the tour?
Not many. I can't draw out an example right now of somebody who just jumped right over college. It did happen in Europe and Australia. I know, well, I say that David Graham, who was a U.S. Open and PGA champion, he was an Australian and now lives in America, but he forfeited school, you know, and decided he wanted to turn professional at a young age. But very few examples of that from the era of golf I played in.
Yeah, you know, I got for Christmas last year a U of H Phi Slamma Jamma shirt, and I know you're a Cougar, so I almost wore that in your honor.
Oh, I've been nice. They were a little after me. I was a little older than that group, but U of H, we've had our share of highlights, of sports highlights.
Yeah, I really have. Well, Bill, it's been wonderful talking to you. When you think back on your PGA career, what are some of the things, maybe life lessons that you learned? Because golf is different from other sports. You had talked about you had gotten kind of mediocre because you were getting burned out. You know, if you're playing pro football, you sign a big contract, well, you're going to get paid regardless. But golf is not like that, because you eat what you kill, and if your game starts to slip, then you're not in the money. What would be some things that maybe a couple, two or three that come to your mind that you say, these are life lessons that I learned from that game?
Well, you stated it nicely there, but, you know, the fact that golf is defined very much black and white. You know, where a score is a posted score is what you earn, and it's a game of high integrity and honesty, and you know, all the idea of calling penalties on yourself or infractions. Mm-hmm. But it's always represented a high level of that, one of the beauties of the game, of being able to play an honest round of golf and with great integrity. It represents that. So we've been involved in a beautiful game, but life lessons, I'd have to say the friendships, relationships made along the way, of not fellow competitors or contemporaries, but, the people that, golf has afforded me to help me navigate this, this thing we call life. And, you know, I don't know of a more, intriguing or interesting, platform with which to share our faith as well. And, it's just a natural in doing that. And I've had the great privilege in this second, half, so to speak, of life to be able to, you know, share testimony and to travel and to, you know, speak about the importance of faith and, and what's my life. So it's an important, ministry tool, I think. And, I'd be one of the ones that has been richly blessed, no doubt about it. And, I'm thankful that you'd give me some time to share a little bit of that, on your podcast this morning.
Yeah. Well, amen to that, Bill. Well, I appreciate you and I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, I do marvel at anybody playing golf, you know how hard it is. And when you see somebody that can compete at the highest level and then be the top of the top of the mountain, so to speak, you know, as you were in the early 80s. And now, Bill, we didn't get into this, but how long did that continue? When you were at the top of your game, let's say in 1981, did that, were you feeling like, hey, I'm 1982, I'm still at the top, 83, still at the top, or did it start to wane?
Well, I'll give you one example of what 1982 golf season, right after everything in the world had happened. I'd won seven times player of the year, all the stuff. My first tournament back on the tour was the Phoenix Open. I can remember on Thursday morning, teeing my ball up, standing behind my golf ball, getting ready to hit my first shot of the 1982 season. And I felt the weight of the world come over me. And I said to myself, I've got to do this again. I've got to prove that that was not Luke last year. And now you talk about insanity.
Yeah.
So the first half of that year was very ordinary. And I, heck, almost self-induced pressure that I put on myself that I'm now the Open champion. I've got to be all everything to everyone. And, you know, so that's just part of what happens with, you know, being, being at the top of your sport. But anyway, for the most part, it was enjoyable to, you know, to represent the game at a high level for a little while anyway, as I call it a little blip from the radar.
Yeah. Very good. Well, God bless you, my brother. And next time you come to Texarkana, I'd love to get together and buy you lunch and get to visit some more.
I appreciate it, Jeff. You're very kind to have me.
Thank you, brother. Well, thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. And listen, the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. It's not that money is, but when you start loving it, when you start pursuing it, that's when it starts to rot out your heart. We as Christians are called to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. He provides for all our needs, and my God shall supply all your needs according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. Do his will. That's where you find satisfaction in life. It's not in money. It's not in achievement. It's in Jesus. Read the book of Ecclesiastes, and you'll see it in full in Solomon's life. Who can eat and who can have enjoyment, he says, without him? Well, go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.